Hello, and welcome to this PERspectives Continuing Education Podcast, created by healthcare professionals for healthcare professionals. PER is a leader in healthcare education and offers free accredited medical education programs in a variety of accessible formats at gotoper.com.
Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Zeichner. I am an associate professor and the director of cosmetic and clinical research in the dermatology department at Mount Sinai Hospital. And I'm happy to be talking to you about what's new in the landscape of neuromodulators and dermal fillers. Over the last few years, we've seen a huge increase in the demand for dermal fillers and neuromodulators, and an equal increase in the number of products available for healthcare providers to use. So we're going to look at these two classes of agents, and in a related program, we'll look at using them in combination. My goal is to answer some of the more frequently asked questions about them. So let's get started. And it's always interesting to do a podcast where essentially you're talking to yourself. So I'm hoping to keep this educational and informative. And we can pretend like we're having a conversation, even though I'm really just talking to you. But first, what are some of the fundamentals of injection anatomy that can optimize the safety for patients undergoing procedures? If you're injecting patients, you really need to know the facial anatomy. And I think that's what really sets dermatologists apart from other practitioners, because we know the skin and we know what's going on underneath the skin. Especially when you're using neuromodulators, the goal is to prevent specific muscles from contracting the way that they normally do. And precise delivery of the neuromodulator to the specific muscle that you want to target is going to result in either a good or a bad outcome. For example, if you're injecting the 11 lines or the glabellar complex, you really want to address the corrugator and the procerus muscles. And if you're injecting too low, you run the risk of getting an adverse event like a droopy lid. If you're injecting too high, you're running the risk of actually getting some of those frontalis fibers, and that may end up dropping the eyebrow. So it's really important that you know the anatomy that you're injecting and recognize that while everybody has the same muscles, the thickness of the muscles, the width of the muscles, the insertion points of those muscles differ from patient to patient. So you need to really analyze the patient before you treat them and as you're treating them. Even the left side of the face and the right side of the face may differ, and you may have a longer corrugator on one side than the other side. You may have a higher corrugator on one side than the other side. So you want to make sure that you're tailoring your injections specifically to the anatomy of the patient that you're treating. Treating them the right way will give you an optimal outcome. And again, treating them like a cookie cutter or treating everybody the same is going to give you poor outcomes in many of your patients. Another common question is about the different botulinum toxins that are available for cosmetic use in the face and what the differences are between them. Now, this is a CME program, and as part of a CME program, we need to make sure that we're using all generic names or all brand names. This is a podcast that you're listening to, so it's going to be really difficult for you to understand if I'm talking all generic. So to make life easy and to be compliant with CME regulations, we're gonna be talking all brand names. So there are 5 botulinum toxins that currently are FDA approved for use in the face. We have Botox, we have Dysport, Jeuveau, Xeomin, and finally, the newest entry into the market is Daxxify. Now, all of these toxins do the same type of job. They prevent the signal, the neurotransmitter, from telling our muscles to contract, but they all have slightly different properties. For example, some people feel that Dysport kicks in a little bit quicker than Botox. Some people feel that Dysport diffuses a little bit further than Botox. Because Xeomin is formulated without some of those complexing proteins, some people feel that it works even when people are resistant to some of the other toxins. Over time, some of them may tend to work a little bit less well. And then finally, the Daxxify is thought to last a little bit longer because of some of the peptides that are being developed in the formulation. Ultimately, we have lots of great tools. And the question is, how are you using those tools in your patients? Some of the decision may come down to finances. What fillers are you purchasing? And are you purchasing a toxin by the same company that you're purchasing your fillers from because you get better pricing? Or maybe you specifically like the properties of one product or another. Ultimately, the decision is yours. All five of these products have been shown to be safe and effective. And you need to see what works in your practice based on your clinical experience and based on the finances of the practice that you're in yourself. So a related question is, are there differences in the injection techniques with the different formulas? A lot of this has to do with your personal preferences again, and you have to see how much you see the product diffusing or how little you see the product diffusing. You need to decide what dilution you're using for the product. If you're using a more concentrated dilution, then perhaps you're injecting a lower volume and the product isn't diffusing as much. If you're injecting a larger volume, perhaps using a lower concentration, the product is diffusing more. And maybe you're injecting a little bit higher than you would be otherwise to take that into consideration. Ultimately, the basic technique is the same no matter which toxin you're using, but because of these other factors, dilution and volume, you may need to make some adjustments. Another question that I get is, how often do you have to modulate the dose of the toxin being used? So each of the toxins have their own FDA approved usage. So you actually can look at the package insert that comes in the box of each of these different vials, and it specifically says what dose was used in the clinical trials and how is it specifically approved. Now, that may be different than the way that you're actually treating your patients, and you need to test out the different products. It's possible that one brand name requires a little bit higher of a dosage than another brand name. It may be possible that one of your patients has stronger muscles or thicker muscles, and a patient like that is going to require more than someone who doesn't have as much muscle mass or doesn't have as much pull in that particular area. So again, you've got lots of different tools to use, but you need to refine how you're using those tools based on your experience in treating patients and based on your experience of treating those same patients again. You have the patients come back into the office in 2 weeks, see how they're looking, see if they need a dose adjustment. You have the patients come back 3 to 5 months after their first injection for their next treatment. And you always want to ask them how they felt about their previous treatment. Did it knock out the muscles the way that they wanted to? Did it knock out the muscles too much? And you can adjust the dosage based on that. You also can adjust the placement based on what the patients are telling you. I often have patients take selfies of themselves, photos of themselves smiling, photos of themselves angry, photos of themselves at rest, and have the patients bring those photos in so that you can see the patients, because oftentimes I'm just seeing patients once their toxin has worn off, and then I see them again 3 to 5 months later after the toxin has worn off again. And a lot of us don't have the opportunity to see the patients when the toxin is fully kicked in. So you don't really see the fruits of your labor, but if patients are coming back, then they're happy. But you always want to make sure that you are tailoring the treatment to the needs of the patient. Now let's change gears a little bit and let's talk about dermal fillers. We often use dermal fillers along with botulinum toxin, but they work completely differently. So if we know that the toxins work by relaxing the muscles and preventing overlying skin from folding, they can help prevent the skin from wrinkling, and they can help wrinkles that are there actually fill in on their own, and they can prevent wrinkles from developing to begin with. The fillers work a little bit differently. They actually give volume to the skin. They give volume to the subcutaneous tissue. So they are not there to address the dynamic wrinkles that we're using botulinum toxins to treat. Instead, we're giving volume back to the face. In some cases, we are treating an individual line, but most of the time, the current consensus is to address full facial volume rather than treating the face as a specific line or treating the face as a set of cheeks or a chin. It's better to have more of a holistic approach in treating our patients' aging concerns. So what are the different classes of dermal fillers? There are three main classes of fillers. First, you have your hyaluronic acid-based products. Next, you have calcium hydroxylapatite-based products. And then we have our more biostimulatory fillers, the poly-L-lactic acid products. And then finally, there are some permanent fillers, the PMMA products, which are used in smaller areas, usually for concerns like acne scarring. So as you look at these three, or I should say four different classes of dermal fillers, there's a lot to choose from. So the first thing you have to think about is, what is your goal? Is your goal to help enhance volume of the lips? Is your goal to help treat a nasolabial fold, rejuvenate the chin, give volume to the cheek? You need to choose a product that is appropriate for use in that particular part of the body. You also have to use a product that you're comfortable with. For example, the calcium hydroxylapatite, for the most part, is a long-lasting product. There are some ways to help dissolve it, but not in the same way that we can dissolve hyaluronic acid fillers with an enzyme called hyaluronidase. So the hyaluronic acid fillers are really the most forgiving of the dermal fillers. Then we have a product like the PLLA, which is Sculptra. And actually, as I said before, we're gonna talk about all brand names. So let me go through those with you now. I just wanna review the names of these different classes of fillers. So we have our Restylane products. We have our Juvederm products. We have the RHA products. These are all hyaluronic acid fillers. We have our calcium hydroxylapatite, which is Radiesse. We have our PLLA filler, which is Sculptra. And then we have our PMMA, which is Belafil. And I just wanna make sure that, again, being a CME program, we're going through all of these brand name products. So you are selecting the product that, number one, addresses the specific need, and number two, is something that you're comfortable injecting. For the most part, my personal practice is predominantly hyaluronic acid-based products. So I'm using a lot of the Restylane and Juvederm-based products. I like the idea that I can actually erase the product. I say that even the best artist needs an eraser every once in a while. And as you look at the individual characteristics of the fillers, I want you to think of them as having a specific goal. Are you using the product to recapitulate bone? Are you using the product to recapitulate deep fat or superficial fat? And you need to understand the specific attributes of the product and why you would use one product in one part of the face and another product in another part of the face. If you're addressing the lips, you want something that's soft and flexible. If you want something that is volumizing or supporting the jawline, you want a product that's really firm. So that's how you're gonna pick and choose your products based on your personal need and based on the part of the face that you're treating and what your ultimate goal is for the filler. So I hope that this discussion has been really helpful and makes you think about which products you wanna use and makes you think about different criteria in selecting those products. One of the big questions that people ask is, can you use neuromodulators and dermal fillers in combination? And if so, how do you do that? Well, the answer is yes, because when we're addressing the aging face, we're addressing skin tone and texture with lasers. We're addressing wrinkles of facial expression using the neuromodulators, and we're addressing facial volume loss with the injectable fillers. And to give the best outcome to our patients, we want to use different tools to address these different issues. If a patient has no wrinkles, but has significant volume loss, that is not necessarily going to look like a younger, better patient. On the other hand, if you have a patient who's been overfilled because you keep injecting injectable fillers, but they have lots of wrinkles and poor skin tone and skin texture, again, this is not necessarily going to look like a younger patient. So the best way to address aging is to use different products that complement each other in terms of the outcomes that they give to the skin and to the tissue underneath the skin. So all the time, I'm combining toxins along with fillers. So the next question is, what are the new developments in the use of toxins and how they're being used in combination with other agents? So the toxins are FDA cleared for use by themselves. They're injected through the skin directly to the muscle. But there's new research in different ways that the toxins actually can be delivered into the skin. So number one, being delivered along with devices. So doing laser procedures first, doing microneedling first, and then delivering the toxins to the skin at a very dilute concentration and very, very superficially. So laser or device assisted penetration of the toxin to the skin. That's one way or one new area of research. Next, we have co-administration of toxins mixed with dermal fillers. And there have been reports that this is being used, particularly in that periocular region. So you can relax the muscle and give some volume back to give enhanced outcomes in treating crow's feet. Next, there are different ways of administering the toxins themselves. Using ultra dilute concentrations, using different levels of injection, so intradermal injection, perhaps to address issues like rosacea or to address sweating. But these are all new ways that toxins are being used by themselves or in combination with other devices or products. Now that we have 5 different brand name toxins on the market, they're being used in all sorts of different ways. Some of them are approved just for the glabellar complex. Some of them are approved for the frontalis, as well as crow's feet or different combinations. And the toxins in the hands of the dermatologists are all being used in new and off-label ways. And they're being used by themselves, or more commonly, they're being used along with injectable fillers. So let's take the lower face as an example. I think that over the past couple of years, especially with the FDA approval of products for the chin, there has been much more attention to the lower face. For many years, there was a huge focus just on the mid face. But now that we're injecting the lower face, we're giving volume back with fillers to improve structure and to improve support. And we're also helping to relax some of the muscles that are pulling downward with the toxins. We're using toxins to address the DAO, the depressor anguli oris. We're using toxins directly into the mentalis muscle. So again, addressing volume and addressing the extra muscle tension that's contributing to wrinkling and contributing to the aging appearance of the lower face. And the same is being true in the upper face. The same is actually true of the décolletage of the upper chest. Hyperdilute Sculptra or diluted hyaluronic acid fillers are actually being injected into the chest along with ultra dilute toxins. And that helps address all of the contributing factors to the aging chest. The same is true of the neck. So everyone lately has been talking about this idea of tech neck, where you're getting these horizontal bands in the neck from constantly looking down at our devices. So perhaps we're getting earlier aging of the neck than we used to. So injectable toxins are given into the platysma muscle to help relax that overactivity of the muscle. And injectable fillers are also being injected directly into the wrinkles or the bands of the neck. And we're getting better outcomes when we're combining these different modalities as you would get if you were just using one or the other treatment. Now let's look at the dermal fillers. The question I want to address here is, what are the newer indications for dermal fillers? As I said earlier, each filler has its own specific properties. Some of them have more lifting effects. Some of them have more plumping effects. Some of them are more cohesive. Some of them are particulate fillers. So each of them behaves a little bit differently in the skin, and you want to make sure that you have a product that's appropriate for the area of the face that you're treating. Well, now we have some newer fillers that have come to the market specifically made for different parts of the body. So you're getting indications, or I should say new indications for old products, or some new products with new indications for different parts of the face. So for example, the newest product that has come to the market is the Juvederm Volux, which is approved for use along the jawline. When it comes to lip injectables, we have many different products that are approved. We have the Restylane products. You have your Restylane L and you have your Restylane Kiss. When it comes to the Juvederm products, you have your Juvederm Ultra and your Juvederm Volbella. Now, each of these products have slightly different attributes, and you're going to choose the product that addresses the need that you're looking for. Do you want structure? Then perhaps you'd use the Restylane L because it's the firmest of the product. And that's for the person perhaps who's lost that structure along the outside of the lip, that wet, dry border. Or are you looking for subtle plumpness? And that's perhaps where you're going to use your Volbella. The regular Juvederm Ultra is going to give you a little bit more of that kind of soft plumpness for the patient who already has the structure. And then you have a product like Restylane Kiss, which kind of checks off a whole bunch of boxes. It gives you a cross between structure and volume. And of course, it gives you longevity. And because of the cross-linking technology, it does last longer in the lips than the other products that are approved. When you have a patient in front of you and you're choosing what product you want to use, I think it's important to take a step back, take a global look at the patient, and choose which product are you going to be able to do the most with. If you're looking for structure, if you're looking for volume, you're going to use two different products. If you're trying to give support and you're injecting superperiostally, you're going to be using a product like Voluma or a product like Restylane Lift. If you're trying to give a little bit more superficial plumping, or you're trying to kind of stuff the skin rather than giving structure and support, then you're going to use something more like the Restylane Contour, which has more lifting properties, but can also fill, or something like the Refine. Within the Juvederm family, something more like Velour. So again, you want to make sure that you're choosing the product that addresses the needs of the skin, but you also have to take into account the patient's budget. Not every patient is going to say to you, I have budget for you to use 6 syringes. So you want to figure out which products you're most comfortable with. You want to figure out which products can be multitasked to achieve the particular goal that you're looking for, and put in as many different areas as you're looking for that specific patient. This has been a really great opportunity for me to speak to you guys about new ways of using neuromodulators and dermal fillers, both on their own and even better in combination. I think that combination use of different products that will address the different signs of aging is really the best way to treat our patients. And hopefully you guys have learned a little bit in listening to me talk to you for 25 minutes and can take these tips back to your clinical practices so you can make the best decisions in choosing the right product for your patients.
Thanks for listening to this PERspectives podcast. If you would like to receive CE credit for participating in this program, visit our podcast page on our website at gotoper.com. Find the name of this program and click on the link for the post-test. If you like today's episode, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening.